You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with someone I have known for, I don't remember when that was, LeBron. But it is LeBron James. No, not that LeBron James, but the smarter, younger, more handsome. I don't know if any of that's true.
But I'll
definitely more handsome. Exactly. LeBron James, also known, as you see from the description under his name, as the Math Man. And he is what are you? The CEO, the CFO of
the CEO of the HNIC, the president, the whole deal.
You are it. You are the whole deal of Stemulate Solutions.
Yes.
Sir. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. So and just to let you know that it is not all just fun and games. That name is not just fun and games. He calls himself the Math Man because what he does, well, how I know LeBron is he was a teacher for, my God, a billion years. Well, you're still a teacher. You're just not working with kids as much, right?
Right, exactly.
So welcome. Anyway, welcome, LeBron, and thank you. And thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much, David. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And is that true? You are no longer in a classroom working with kids on a regular basis. Well, that's not even true. So maybe do it rather than me making one mistake after the next.
That's okay. So, yeah. So I was a classroom teacher for 15 years, 5 years under your leadership, which was fantastic. And then I transitioned
you don't have to say that.
It's the truth, though. But then also now for the last 10 years, I've gone around the country training teachers how to teach math primarily to students of color, because I realized teaching is more cultural than it is content.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. I'll just put my two cents out there. You know, it's a loss to the kids that LeBron is no longer actually on a daily basis in a classroom working with those kids, just because he was one of the most, if not the most, talented math teacher we've ever had. Not only talented, but the kids who never loved math with LeBron. So there's some sort of magic. I don't know what your jump shot is like, but there's some sort of magic with what you do with
Thank you
kids.
So much, David. I appreciate it.
So why'd you make the switch?
You know, it was partly financial, partly just a change, because I felt like I had got to a level where I really understood teaching. And ironically, the last school I taught at was a private Jewish school, Milken Community High School. And so what was interesting was I'd already been teaching 10 years. I already knew how to teach. But in my interview with the rabbis, they said, LeBron, what do you know about Jewish culture? I was like, not a whole lot. They said, okay, well, you can't teach our kids unless you know our culture. So the first year you're teaching here, you have to come after school twice a week. You got to study the Torah. You got to practice Shabbat. You got to go to bar mitzvahs, because you need to know our culture if you're going to teach our kids. And it blew my mind, David. I was like, wow, I've never heard that. No one had to know black culture when I was in school. No one had to go to a Baptist church or to a backyard barbecue. So I was like, this was interesting. So actually,
did it feel like you actually, that it was important, as important as the rabbi said?
Oh my God. They hit the nail on the head. It was frustrating in the beginning, because what teacher wants to stay after school twice a week to do additional work? But by my second year, I was like, oh my God, this is genius. Like, I understand my students at a much deeper level, and I could be way more effective. Now, keep in mind, I'm teaching pre-calculus, which is difficult enough. But then they say, hey, by LeBron, by the way, we observe all the high holidays, so we'll be closed almost the whole month of October. I was like, sweet, I get a month off. I was like, hopping the Gila, baby. I love this. But I lost a whole month of instruction, David. I was like, how am I going to get through pre-calculus? Then they said, oh, and you can't test on Fridays for obvious reasons. So I was like, wow, I can't test on Fridays and I lose a whole month. So knowing the culture really helped me a lot as a teacher. And it really changed how I thought about teaching and how I taught. So at the Jewish school, I learned to put culture eats curriculum for breakfast is what I learned.
What do you mean? What does that mean? Culture eats curriculum.
So if I can't connect to the student's culture, it doesn't matter what content I'm teaching. It's irrelevant if I don't start with their culture first. And so after teaching there 5 years, I realized I now want to start my own school for Black and brown boys, where every teacher needs to know Black and Latino culture before they teach them. So I got that idea from Milken. So that's when I applied to Harvard. And then in my application, I said, I worked at Milken and I'm applying to Harvard so I can create a chocolate Milken. I don't know if they got the joke or not, but but it worked.
And you did go there.
And I did go there.
Yeah. So what was your... Like, did you grow up a math kid? Like, you know, from the time you first went to school, you were just like, numbers, 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 give me more, give me more?
No, man. Actually, I didn't even like math as a kid. And what's interesting is I didn't meet my father until I was 9 years old because my parents split when I was a kid. So when I met my father, it was interesting. He said two things to me that I'll never forget. I was like 9 years old, 9 or 10 years old when I met him. The first thing he says is, do you know how to shoot a gun? I was like, no, I don't. He says, okay, I'll teach you that later. He goes, second thing is, you're going to be a mathematician, whether you like it or not. I was like, I hate math, Dad. He goes, you're going to be a mathematician because everyone in this world needs a mathematician. And you're going to be the first person in our family that doesn't use a broom or a mop to make a living. You're not going to do manual labor. And so he put me through this rigorous program of mathematics. And by ninth grade, I actually fell in love with it.
Okay, so wait. So how did he... So he was a math guy?
No. He was a mechanic and he owned a janitorial company. But he knew it through life that everyone needs a mathematician at some point. And that if you're a mathematician, you have a skill that people will admire and is always useful.
Okay, so you didn't like math, but were you good at it? You didn't like math till you were in ninth grade, but were you good at it?
I was average. I would just say average. I wasn't horrible. I wasn't good. I was average. But what my dad made me do is when the teachers gave the odd problems, because they had the answer in the back of the book, he made me do all the problems.
Right.
And if the teacher was on chapter 4.1, he said, you got to read to 4.5. I said, Dad, I have no idea what I'm reading. He says, doesn't matter. You're going to stay ahead and you're going to outwork everyone. He said, because if you outwork everyone, eventually it'll get easy. And the ninth grade, it became easy.
It became easy. And what were your math teachers like? Were they a version of who you are?
No.
You know, were they cool? Were they black? Were they brown? Could you see yourself in them?
I couldn't see myself in any of my teachers. From kindergarten through my master's at Harvard, I think I've only had two black teachers in my entire life.
Wow.
Only two. And none of my math teachers were. So, but I had a great eighth grade math teacher. And then I had a phenomenal calculus teacher, Mrs. Waddell. The meanest honorary lady, but she was phenomenal.
And have you gotten to the place where you feel like that matters? In other words, does it matter to the kids when their math teacher walks in the room and it's a black dude?
Yes, it matters 100%. Actually, research shows that kids learn better and perform better with black math teachers than non-black math teachers.
You mean black kids or most kids?
All kids.
Really?
Yeah, it's the craziest thing. Yeah, I read that research when I was at Harvard. I was like, whoa, interesting. I didn't know. But there's only like 1% black teachers, so there's not a large sample space. So maybe if we had more, they would get worse. But that's what the
research showed. Well, there is that, right? Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And look, I know you, so I know it. Yes. It matters to you. It matters that you are. It's not like you can't relate to white kids. I mean, I know that for sure.
Exactly.
But your commitment, I don't even know commitment. Your deepest commitment is to your people, right? I mean, and whatever that means. I mean, I don't even know how to think about and talk about it anymore, right? Because your people, you know, I've watched you relate to every kind of person there is, but we live in the historical and current cultural reality of this place and you know, although I think it's gotten better, opportunities are less frequent for people of color, and they so
that's why I think my experience to me is so funny, because typically 80% of teachers are white women, and they're usually middle class or upper middle class. And then for some reason, I still can't figure out why they leave that great life to go teach in inner city, poverty stricken communities of color. I'm like, why would you do that? If I was white, I would stick with my white people. I mean, that's what I would do. If I had a choice, I wouldn't go to the hood and put myself through that. So I'm the opposite. I grew up poor. And then I had the privilege of teaching the top 1% of the wealthiest, richest, successful people and white people. So all of my students, rarely did I have a lot of students who look like me. But as you know, I love all students. If you're in my class, we are family for the rest of your life. That's just the way it is.
Right. That's always been you. I mean,
that's me.
Well, so... was it harder to teach? Is it more challenging to teach students of one culture or another?
It's not harder if you are willing to understand and empathize with their culture. The more that you can relate to someone's culture, the easier it is. Because kids have their own kid culture, first of all. Then they have their like ethnic or religious culture. To me, that's the background. Just being a kid now in this social media digital age, that's its own culture that teachers need to understand. And most teachers don't. We're still back in the horse and buggy era.
Yeah.
So you gotta be current. If you stay current, you can relate to any kid. But then, you know, even at the same time, when I was at Milken, there were some nuances about
the Jewish school,
about Jewish culture and things that really informed me, because I was ignorant. So I knew that if you were Christian, there was 150 different ways to be Christian. There's Lutheran, Catholic, Baptist.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, I'm down with the Jews because there's just one way to be Jewish. They don't have all these different splinters.
Well, that's not really true. Yeah, exactly, right?
That's what I learned. I was like, oh my God, I was so wrong.
Right.
Like, there's so many different ways to be Jewish. And there's a Sephardic, there's Ashkenazi, there's Reformed, you know. And I was like, whoa. So it blew my mind. So then when they talked about diversity, I'm like, how can you say diversity? Because you're all Jewish. But then through my learning, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of diversity within the Jewish community. So it was educational for me. And then it made me a better teacher, I think.
Yeah. That's interesting. Now you're fast forward. Now you're teaching teachers. So I'm assuming you speak to them about that culture. It's curriculum for breakfast.
You got it.
So do they push back? Do they like, what is this? Yes. Wah, wah, wah. Well, nonsense. Right?
Right. And then here's the funny part. They always think, I'm like, look, because the I work with low performing schools. Typically, there's a high Latino population in California. And then there's some like 5 to 7% black students. And then you have some Asian students. If you see a white student in a public school, call the police because something is wrong. You do not see white kids in low performing public schools unless they just have no other option. Yeah. So the teachers are like, LeBron, obviously you can relate to kids because you're also black. That's sort of the mentality. But when I tell them I taught primarily Jewish students and rich, wealthy white students, and I adjusted to their culture, then they're more receptive to what I have to say. Because it's not about you relating to your culture. It's how do you relate to other cultures? And the more you learn about them, the easier it is.
Okay, so this is interesting. So in other words, if I walked into your class.
Yes.
I recognize you're not in a classroom now necessarily. But if I walk into your class when you're teaching at the Jewish school versus when you're teaching at, you know, I know you were teaching at Buckley, which is a, you know, the high performing sort of, it fancies itself a rigorous academic school versus New Rose versus, versus a charter school that is, or not even a charter school that is largely African American, black.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Will I see a different LeBron? Will I see a different math? What's the difference?
That's a great question. Yes. The difference is how they react socially and sort of like big cultural norms or deeper things. So in all my classes, I play music. So I always play music to whatever the kids are listening to. So that's across the board, whatever kids. And ironically, from the all black school in the hood to the Jewish school, all the kids listen to rap music. So that's just it across the board. I'm like, do your parents know you're listening to this? But that's what kids like. So I'm like, hey. So
I was about to say, we're living in a different time now. Yeah.
A different time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But how I relate to them is different. So I'll give you one true example. So when I taught at the all black school Price High School in South Central LA, I had some boy who was really acting out some strange behavior. So I asked, what's wrong with this? He goes, well, his father left. He doesn't have a father in the home, and he's been acting out since his father left. Fast forward 5 years, I'm at Buckley, and I have a little white kid in high school, and he's acting out. And I'm like, you're acting strangely like the black kid at the black school. So I said, what's up with him? He goes, oh, his dad is a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and he's always gone.
Oh, he's acting out. Like,
So I'm saying, oh, so it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If your dad is not there, boys are going to act out. So that's when I realized it's all the same, just slightly different nuances.
But the math, the way you approach, the way a teacher approaches math.
Yes.
Different?
Oh, here we go. Different. So for the black kids in the hood, I said, you need to know this math so you can get out of poverty. I said, it'll be your competitive advantage, because if you don't have a jump shot or if you can't rap, pretty much math is all you got left that's going to get you out of this situation. So that's the context in which I would teach math. At Milken, I would say, look, you know, you're going to have to take over this $100 million company one day, right? So when you take over this $100 million company that your parents give you that you don't deserve, you better know how to do the math, because you can't be losing this money.
You know what I mean? it's not the curriculum that changes, it's the motivation.
There you
it's
go.
It's your way of motivating the kids.
There you go. Yep.
So you can't. So let me give you and maybe this is an unfair question, but you can't teach that to teachers. So how do they
yes.
Oh, what you know. what do they expect from you when they, so right now you're in Stockton, you're yes. working with charter schools. Is it charter schools?
Public schools.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're working with a bunch of public schools. You just said it before we went on, right? They're low performing schools yes. usually. What is it that they think they're getting from you if you can't, you can't teach them your personality, your, you know, you have a certain charismatic way of being with young people. You know, maybe you have a charismatic way of being, period, but certainly with kids, I've watched it. And so what is it that the teachers are getting from you?
Great question, David. This reminds me, like, whenever you would call me into your office, you would always ask me these philosophical, like, I'd be messing up and stuff. And rather than firing me, Debbie, like, LeBron,
you never messed this? Up. You never messed up. Well, there was that time when, which yes. I still, one of my favorite moments, distance learning.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I've told teachers, look, everyone brings a different energy and a passion to the job. You may not have the passion and energy and love for kids the way I do, but in your job, there are three things you can do and you will still get almost the same results I get. So there's certain things you can do. And if you change that about your practice, you will get results. And so I get them to buy into a changing two or three things. The one thing is I'm currently writing a book called Math is Emotional.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you if there's a,
yeah. Yeah.
Math is emotional.
How you learn. Yes. It's emotional. So teachers, their emotions dictates how they teach. So if I'm insecure as a teacher, maybe I don't know my content level, like in elementary school, then I don't engage kids in really thought provoking math problems because I'm insecure. I don't feel secure enough. I may be wrong. I don't want kids to think I'm wrong. So all these emotions teachers have impacts how they teach. So if you are secure with your content, secure with yourself, then you're more likely to let kids think, express themselves, move around the room,
ask hard questions.
Yes.
Right? Ask questions you don't necessarily even know the answer to.
There you go.
And yet not be knocked off your feet. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, but I want some more of that low-hanging fruit. You said there's three things. So yes. So what are a couple of others?
Yeah, a couple of other things you can do. One, you have to constantly check for understanding. So what I mean is when you go to the doctor, you tell the doctor this hurts. And the doctor checks it, x-rays, whatever. They're checking to see if there's a problem. And then they prescribe a methodology to handle it. And classes, teachers teach for 45 minutes without stopping to say, hey, kids, do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand anything? So I train teachers to at least three times per class, give a problem and let kids try it on a whiteboard or something, and then count how many of the 20 kids got it. If 15 or more got it right, keep teaching. If less than 15 got it right, then you as a teacher didn't do your job. So you need to go back and figure it out. You know,
happened to those five kids though? The five kids who didn't get it.
Yeah, they're gonna get it on the second bounce.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they're gonna have to get it on the second bounce. And so you make a good point, because teachers nowadays, from my experience only, focus on student behavior rather than student intelligence. They want to control kids, be quiet, sit there, don't move. They're more concerned about them feeling safe rather than kids learning and expressing themselves. So that's why I always focus on academics, teach your way out of it. Don't discipline your way out of it. Teach your way out of it.
That's interesting.
So, yeah. And so
What does that look like? What does that look like? What do you mean teach your way out of it?
Teach your way out of it.
I got a couple of kids who, you know, because they don't really understand this. They don't really like it. It's hard. Or they just walk in with the attitude, you know, I'm not a math person. I'm yes. just not a math person. And so they're going to add, they're acting out. So how do I teach my way out of this?
Right. So one way to teach your way out of it is understanding one, a principle called the 80-20 rule. This is what I train the teachers on. That 20% of the things you do in your life, and this is all of us, create 80% of our outcomes. So 20% of the things you do, David, are going to give you 80% of your outcomes, and 80% of the stuff you do is a waste of time. That's a hard concept. That's a hard concept for human beings to understand. So, like, I'll show you, David.
Like, so, Mr. James, so I only have to do 20% of the homework, right?
Yes, but the 20% that's going to give you the 80% of your learning. So all homework is not important. Not the whole assignment is important. So if you think about this, think about fundraisers, right? Private schools, New Roles, Buckley, all of them done do fundraisers. I said, look at the fundraising, who gives? 20% of your parents give 80% of the money. Everybody's going to give the same amount.
No, right.
So you know there's some families that are really important to a school because a few families take care of the majority of the cost. And that's how it is in life. In the classroom, I used to think all these kids are bad when I was a beginning teacher. Now I realize 20% of the kids cause 80% of my problems. So it's not a bad classroom. It's just a few kids that's knuckleheads. 20% of the kids that cause the 80%. Yeah.
But what do you do with the kids or maybe the elementary school teachers who say, I'm just not a math person, right? That's the, you know, the number of times you hear that, and then the number of times you hear that, not just from kids and not necessarily just from teachers, but from the parents of kids, you know, yes. said, you know, look, he's not a math person. I'm not a math person. I can't do math, whatever, whatever. What's the approach there? Because, you know, in some ways, it's from my mind, it's inexcusable. It's like it's almost like you're sending the message to kids, you know, when an adult says that you get to be illiterate when it comes to mathematics, and you would never say that if somebody said, well, you know, I'm just not a letters person. I just don't do reading, right? That's but it's a common thing that people think like that. So what do you do there?
I think that's the biggest problem in American education is we as an American culture have resigned to the fact that we're not good at math and it's okay. And then we create these labels like I'm not a math person. It's that mindset first that's the challenge, David, is there's no such thing as a math person. Whatever
you spend the majority of time doing, what do you do with those kids who feel that way and whose parents have felt that way? What do you do? What do you do to help them become a math person?
Yep.
A math person, whatever that means.
It's tough. That was a tough one. And that's one of my constant struggles. But I always ask them, do you go to the store? Do you buy things? Do you ever go shopping and say, okay, this is 20% off, and then know how much it's going to cost? I said, do you pay the rent, light bill, and car note, even though you know you don't make enough money to do so, and you still survive? So everyone's doing math. Everyone's doing algebra constantly. Anytime you solve a personal problem, you're doing the algebra. But they don't understand it's algebra. So they don't understand the formal language and symbols related to what they're doing. So I always tell them everything you're doing is always mathematical. So you can't tell me not the math. If you don't like math, then you just don't like money. So go be homeless. Those are your options.
So what is it actually that stimulate solutions. Good name, by the way. What is that it actually does? Well, go ahead. You tell me.
Yeah. So Stimulate Solutions, what our company does is we train teachers to be culturally responsive and to provide rigorous math instruction that's simple, fun, and entertaining. because math is not, it's not easy, but it is simple.
What does that mean?
Math is not easy because problems get complicated, but it's simple. Meaning, everything is about opposites. The opposite of addition is what?
That'd be subtraction, yeah.
There you go. And the opposite of division is?
Multiplication, yeah.
There we go. So if you just understand these basic opposites, you got 80% of math down. Yes.
Can you use those same principles that it's, you know, that it can be, that math class can be fun and whatever that is, whatever the other ones were,
and
for entertaining, for complex mathematics?
Yes, because I taught complex mathematics. Pre-calculus is far more difficult than actually calculus. People don't understand. Absolutely.
No, pre-calc.
In people's mind, pre-calc is a monster.
It's a beast.
In fact, I'm teaching
really.
Pre-calc to students of color this summer at USC. So I'm excited to actually be with students again. So I'm super hyped to teach this pre-calculus class this summer. But you can make it simple, fun, and entertaining by first connecting to students. What do students like? What's popular to them? So the entertainment part is the environment that you create. You create an environment where everyone knows it is safe to be wrong. And that usually takes a week or two for everyone to buy in, like, it is really okay to be wrong. Like, LeBron gets excited when I'm wrong. He doesn't really care when I'm right. So when I create that environment, then I get kids to really try. It's all about effort. If I believe I can do something, I'll put in effort. That's what's so interesting to me about Black kids, especially Black boys in math. Society says, if you are a Black male, we believe you can play sports. The whole world believes you can play sports. So because you get a message from the world that you can play sports, even if you're horrible at it, you will keep trying over and over again. Tons of kids keep trying to play sports, knowing we got 2 million Black kids trying to play sports for 60 jobs. Do the math on that one.
They're all going to be pros, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And no matter how bad they are, they ride the bench, they still believe because society gives them a message, a reinforcing message. We believe that because your melanin is darker than mine, that you are good at sports. But they don't get that in math. So they think instantly, I'm not good at math. But the same effort you put into sports is the same effort you need to put into math. Because if you can be disciplined enough to do the math, you'll be disciplined enough to play the sport and get better. But they don't see the correlation between the two. So it's all about expectations are the key. If an Asian kid walks into my class, everyone thinks, oh, that's the math person. That kid knows math. I'm like, why? Because he's Asian? Like,
yeah, because it's a world of bigotry. And, right, stereotypes and nutty, right? Yeah.
So it's about those setting those expectations. Really, the expectation is the teacher. If the teacher expects all kids to learn, kids will learn math at a high level. But you got to have a strong level, a constitution of expectation. Like, I accept nothing but the best, your very best. And that happens in private schools, but it doesn't happen in public schools, in my experience.
Mm, mm. And do you also notice differences in divisions? Like, so I mean, one of the stories out there, and I'm assuming it's research-based, but I don't know the answer to that, is that often, not always, but not across the board, but often elementary school mathematics is subpar, largely because elementary school teachers tend to be not math people.
Yep.
And is that your experience in the when you're working with teachers?
You nailed it. So my job is really easy. Generally, if I'm dealing with elementary school teachers, they are strong below the neck with the social, emotional, connecting, learning environment with kids, but they struggle above the neck in terms of math content. So I do everything above the neck and below the neck. middle school and high school teachers are strong above the neck. They know the content, but they struggle below the neck. They can't connect with a kid to save their lives, and they distance themselves, and they lack empathy, especially in the math classroom. So in middle school and high school, I'm working on the emotional state more so than content. And then elementary school, I'm like, let me show you.
You're working with it with the teachers.
Yes, with the
teachers.
You're
working with the teachers about that. That's interesting.
So elementary school, it's really, let me just teach you the content. I can teach you teacher moves and all that, but that's not what you need. You don't know the content deeply. So if I can teach it to you deeply in this safe classroom with just the three of us, now you have the confidence to try the other stuff that I want you to get to do later. So it took me a while to figure that one out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what if anything is the future of Stemulate solutions? Is it you just mentioned you were writing a book.
Yes. So the book, like I said, Math is Emotional, is to get people to understand, to get teachers first to understand that everything you do starts from how you feel. So you send, Debbie, you can send teachers to conferences, to professional development. But if inside I feel like I'm not a math person, there's no PD that's going to change how I feel. So I work on the feelings first, because if I get you to feel a different way, then I know you'll take a different action. So that's where the majority of my focus is, and different activities and things we do to change how teachers feel first about themselves, and then how they feel about their students. It's so funny. So I'm here coaching these teachers. So I'm working with a teacher yesterday, and she's just following the curriculum page by page. I'm like, kids aren't going to learn unless you teach. That's just a resource. And then I said, well, tell me about your own kids. I said, how come your own kids don't go to this school? She goes, oh no, my kids go to private school. I said, oh, really? She goes, oh, yeah. I said, so what's the difference? She goes, expectations. She goes, the expectations at the private school are so much higher than they are here at this school. We don't expect kids to learn. We don't expect kids to excel. So we teach down to a level because we have low expectations.
And this is the teacher saying this.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I see it all the time, and I experience it. I was so glad that she was so candid to actually share that. So what I told her to do, I said, look, you have the opportunity to send your kids to private school. I said, these black and brown kids, I love these kids. They don't have that opportunity. So I'm going to make you a private school teacher. So you're going to have a private school class inside this public school. So she committed to that. So that's what we're going to work on for next year.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, LeBron, if we were going to stop soon, what have we not spoken about that's important to talk about? That's not a trick question, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We haven't talked about what do we see as the future of education? Because we know the mess we're in now, but where is it going, or where should it go? That's what we haven't talked about.
So, where should it go?
You know, part of what I'm working on, what we're working on at Stemulate Solutions, is how do you use technology to multiply the effectiveness of highly effective teachers? Now, what I see happening in the marketplace is people are, with this ed tech, they're trying to create technology to replace the teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
That is the wrong method, in my opinion. No one can teach a child better than a human being. Then a trained teacher is the best way to teach another human being. A machine or an app cannot do that effectively.
Yeah.
And I see it every day in classes.
Yeah. It's interesting that's not more obvious to people. Mm. I mean, look, different people have different aptitudes and inclinations. Some kids get certain things really quickly. Other kids have to work at it and, you know, eventually get it. But so the kids with the aptitude for something, you know, you could stick them on Khan Academy and
you can, whatever.
And they'll learn whatever you want, right? I mean, no problem. No problem. But most people are not that, right? And
the majority are not.
And without a teacher who can go to where the kids are and then take them on from there. Well, I mean, you know, this is my, I'm on my soapbox here, but this is supposed to be your soapbox.
That's fine.
But it's just obviously true, right? You know, teachers need to go where the kids are to get them to go along. And there'd be some kids who could just, you know, they'll do it no matter what. You could just put them under a mattress and they're going to figure out how to learn, right? Yep. You know, that's not that. So it's the door. What is that?
I'm sitting in this classroom. And so I'm at the school and I guess they have these bells.
Oh, you're at the class in the school now. I get it.
Yeah. And another thing I was telling teachers, public schools have bells.
Yeah.
Because you're like training to herd cattle.
Yeah.
Private schools don't have bells because they're training leaders. It's the environment in which you put kids in. It's the hidden curriculum to me that's important. Because when you spend 10 minutes telling kids to line up at the door, why?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to lunch.
Where'd you go to school? Did you grow up in public schools?
Yes, all public schools. So I went to public school in National City down in San Diego, the southern part. Then I went to UCLA, which is a public school. The first private school I went to was Harvard. That was the first private school I ever attended. So I'm a public school kid.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too, just so you know.
We turned out all right.
We did. We turned out okay. Mark, you know, whatever.
Whatever that is, yes.
Some days better than others, but.
Yeah, you got that right.
Well, LeBron James. Thank you. And LeBron James of Stimulate Solutions. Thank you so much for being willing to come on to Curiosity Invited and visit an old friend, which I really appreciate. And
hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah. This was fantastic. And, you know, I can't wait till I can come to your estate and we can break bread.
Yeah, indeed. That'll be good. Or I'll come to yours, but I'm not going to Stockton. Sorry.
No, you're not. No, come to LA.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.